Morning, everybody. Have you ever tackled a project and felt like the subject matter expert's explanation left you more confused than when you started? Yeah, I'm not alone in that, am I? Do I have to start over? Are we good? Okay. Well, I'm definitely not alone in that. I'm certain you guys have all experienced that at one point or another. It's our job as technical writers to take the complex and make it as clear as possible for our readers. We want them to be empowered to use the products that we're documenting, because without that, there's no success for our readers, which are our end users. There's no success for our company, and that's how companies close down, of course. Learning to use the new gadget. So for today's session, what I'm going to walk you through is my method for creating customer-friendly user guides for complex software. I'm going to cover my background, which will explain the foundation behind my process for untangling the complicated. Then we're going to move into some of the doc to help features and how it impacted my writing style and shaped what I was doing to improve my outputs. And finally, I'm going to walk you through an example of drafting a document for a version 1.0 product that my company designed and show you how doc to help improved that process. And at the end, we'll wrap up with some questions and answers. So, a little bit about me. It's probably my least favorite part of this presentation. My name is Robin Stefani. I am the Technical Training and Communications Manager at StealthBits Technologies. And yes, I wrote this next sentence down. StealthBits Technologies is a cybersecurity software company focused on protecting an organization's sensitive data and the credentials attackers use to steal that data. That's our marketing line. I've worked there for a little over 6 years, and as you can imagine, our software is extremely complex. It's actually designed for IT administrators, not casual users. I'm not an IT administrator. I started my career as a middle school teacher. I worked in school for 15 years before becoming a writer. I've been a writer, as I mentioned, for a little over 6 years now. And most common question I get, of course, is, what subjects did you teach? My career spanned everything from fourth grade to 10th grade at one point or another. I usually worked in multi-grade classrooms, so I'd have two grades, three grades, four grades, all at the same time, which is kind of cool because you get to keep them year after year and really get to know your students well. Makes a difference. But what it also did was it made me very good at planning lesson plans. I had to customize everything to meet the needs of the individual classes. And so I used that in my writing. I took the skills that I learned as a teacher, and I've turned that into my writing process. Right now, I manage a team of 5 writers. We just hired our 5th writer last month. And about 3.5 years ago, I went from being the sole writer at StealthBits to their technical writing and training team manager. I really enjoy what I do. I don't feel like I've left education. I feel like I've brought education to the writing world. I've learned to untangle the complicated through lesson plan studies and curriculum design, and I applied that to what we do in documenting software and complex ideas. Since I'm not an engineer, I've had a lot of conversations with subject matter experts where I have no idea what they just said to me. Like, can you repeat that in layman's terms so that I can repeat it for my readers? I realize my readers are actually technical people as well, but I have to take what R&D is doing and translate it, and sometimes I find myself even translating it for our own customer-facing engineers. You know, they tend to be really good at what they do, and that doesn't mean they're really good at explaining, but that's okay, because, you know, that's what we do. We take the technical and we translate it for our readers. whatever it is that the developer or the quality assurance engineer is trying to explain to you, they're seeing it from very narrowed perspective. They forget about the end user and how the end user is actually going to be interacting with your software. And so we take their message and we turn it on the other side and we present it to our end users in the easiest, most fluid fashion for their usage. One of the things I push my own team members to do is to learn their software. I may not be able to configure a network, but I can become an expert in the product that we're selling. I may not be able to tell someone how to configure their network so that my product can work, but I can give them all the information they need to properly configure their environment to allow the product to work correctly. So you have to really dive in and pull apart your software. You have to understand all the bits and pieces and all the little components that tie together, understand the relationship between them. And that's really where we start. In curriculum development, that's what you do. You take a subject, think mathematics. You break it down into the individual key components. You teach the components and you rebuild up to the main point of what you were really trying to teach. It's the same way with writing. We want to break down the software to where we can push out the smaller components, focus on those individual pieces. Then we build it back up to that end point of being successful with the software. Dive into your software. Learn every aspect of it. Click every button. Be like a kindergartner. Click everything. They never leave anything untouched. Become the expert and thereby become your reader's advocate. You're going to drive your subject matter experts crazy with questions, but that's good. You want to ask the questions. You want to force them to explain it to you until you have a solid comprehension. And let's face it, if you don't understand what you're writing about, then your readers aren't going to understand what they're reading. You're going to leave out something by accident without ever realizing it was missing in the first place. I mentioned that my software focuses on IT, the IT world. I ended up learning a lot of jargon when I hit IT world. For example, who here knows what a domain is? Oh, one person. Two people. No clue when I started. Didn't know what a domain was. For me, it was one of those IT jargon words that I had to learn. I had to research. I had to find out about. For you, it's actually what controls security around the environment you work in if you have a Microsoft environment. So Active Directory and domains, they guard your environments where you authenticate with your password for a general end user. I may not ever be able to configure an Active Directory domain, but I can explain to a domain administrator how to use my software to manage his domain, to control it, to fix problems that he encounters. And that's really where my focus needs to lie, not on what his job is, but on how my tool will help his job to be easier and better. What I was finding as I met with the subject matter experts and learned these IT jargon words, I started to wonder why, when I tried to follow my own instructions, things didn't seem to work. I'd get about halfway through the steps, I'd find that, I don't know, just something wasn't right. Was it my confusion? Did they give me bad information? Is it a bug in the product? Because, of course, we're always working with beta software, so there's always that possibility. But a lot of times I was finding it was a simple case of omission. They were forgetting to tell me stuff that they took for granted. They'd start in the middle of the steps without telling me how I got to that point to start the process. And so as I learned and grew my own understanding of the technology and the environments and the space in which my software resides, I learned that the best way to tackle this is through taking advantage of all of your resources. not just your subject matter experts. They're really good in what they're doing, but again, they're leaving out that key information that makes the difference for your understanding. So I developed a method for handling new features that had content I was unfamiliar with. I'd meet with the developer, I'd get a demonstration, and I wouldn't ask a lot of questions, but I took a lot of notes. I'd spend some time researching the technology, the terminology, and I'd get to the point where I'd feel like I had a really good, solid understanding of this set of terms, this new feature capability, what it's working with. I would then go to a third party, maybe another developer who wasn't working on the new feature, maybe a customer-facing engineer who would be responsible for supporting the new feature when it was released. And I'd explain to them, verbally, what I understood about the new feature. If they followed what I was doing, then I knew I was on the right track. If they were lost, then I'd explain to them what I did understand and see if they couldn't help me find my missing pieces. As a third party, neutral, they're not going to take offense at me saying, I don't understand. And so many developers are like, well, why don't you understand? But, you know, support engineer, pre-sales engineer, professional services engineer, the people who work every day with those customers, they're going to say, oh, well, this is the piece you're missing. They're going to recognize the omission that had been made in the original explanation. Once I got that solid understanding, so I went through the developer, I went through the third party, I came back to write, put my content down on paper, so to speak, electronically, of course, and then I took that back to my original developer. I said, okay, review this content. Am I missing anything? This is when I asked my questions, because now I had the right questions to ask. I didn't necessarily when I didn't understand what he was talking about, but this time when I come back, I know exactly what questions I need to ask. I know what questions or what information is missing, what information was omitted from the original demonstration. And now I can wrap up and conclude my content with more solid information for my end user. I'm going to sneak a quick drink here, sorry. My little statue guy here is pointing to protocol. Beware of words with multiple meanings. For a tech writer, they're a nightmare. Protocol was mine. We offered a new feature one day on encryption capabilities. I never worked with encryption capabilities. I sat through, following my process, I sat with the developer, had him walk me through everything, spend a little bit of time researching, and I found out that the word protocol has lots of different meanings for lots of different aspects of IT security, and they're not that far distant from each other. If I had written my content based on the knowledge I had right then, my readers would have been lost. So I found the one person in the company who was known to be a network expert, specifically on encryption, and I said, help me untangle this. That one actually took us about an hour and a half. Learned a lot about all the different types of protocols, but it was a good session. And I walked away understanding exactly what my readers needed to understand the word protocol properly and use it properly in the documentation so that my readers could configure their encryption options with no confusions, no misleading, no taking them down the rabbit hole that word opened up. So beware of those kinds of words. When you do find them, when you do stumble across them, take the time to find, again, that neutral party really makes a difference. There's always somebody in the company who's willing to explain something. So find that person, work with them, get your own knowledge to grow, and don't be scared to ask those questions. They know that the writers, they're not technical typically, so they understand that you need just a little bit of extra explanation for this to really flow for the customer. Sorry about that. All right, so we've covered untangling the complicated. Now that we've found those key components, what do we do with them? Now it's time to build it back up, to organize your content in such a way as to present a truly customer-friendly user guide. If you think about software, it has a structure, just like a building. Your code is that foundation that nobody sees, it's underground. Your navigation builds out the user interface that is the structure, and that becomes the window dressing that we're actually documenting. As you broke down the content sections and really explored your software, focus on the relationships between the components next. So you've broken it down, you've explained all the different content options. Now, what's related to what? Where do we tie the pieces together? How do they connect to flow naturally? In this one, you're really discovering the order that your user needs to know this information. You know, are they going to start with configuration, or are they going to start with running something? Think about it two ways. What's the minimum they need to know, like what you would put in a quick start guide? And what's the extra stuff that would really give them the advantage of using all the available features? I don't know about you guys, but I rarely use all the features in my own software tools that I take advantage of. But the more features you can introduce your user to, the more advantage they can get out of this tool and the better experience they'll have. So we're breaking down the software. We're finding those basic components. I've said that over and over again because I can't stress enough how important that piece is. We want to create a user experience that is fruitful. So we lay out the steps for the most important operations first. You find those, you focus on those. Those are the things that they need to know. Then you continue to enhance your explanations until you basically reassemble it. Present them with all their tools. Give them the toolkit where they can go in and say, okay, I need to do this. This feature lets me do that. I need to do this. This feature lets me do that. When you tackle it one component at a time, even the most complex of software becomes really easy to think about. So when you find yourself staring at a user interface that has 15 different options on it, train your eyes to focus on one. Find the simplest one. Find the first thing that needs to be used. Build that out. Move on to the next. Tackle it one piece at a time. Anything can be accomplished when you break it down into a small piece, which means no matter how complex your software is and how untechnical you might consider yourself to be, you can still document the most technical, complex software that can be out there. When you bring all those pieces back together, you're going to organize them based on what meets the needs of the user the most. So, does my software provide that welcome wizard that walks them through all the configuration pieces? Or do they install and find themselves staring at a blank user interface? What am I supposed to do next? Bring all the pieces back together in the order that makes the most amount of sense for that product. For some of my products, those welcome wizards do everything they need to do right up front, so all they have to do really once they get inside is click and start running the program. For others, there's some type of deployment that has to take place or some process that they have to walk through after installation. There's no easy-to-use wizard. That's, of course, all dependent upon your developers and how they looked at it. Remember, they're seeing it with one direction. Your users are seeing it from another. So that's really where you turn it around and you bring all that content back together. I think I got ahead of my slides. So, do You hear your Comp 101 professor in the background? Here are the building blocks that really make a good user guide. Overview, content, conclusion. You hear them, right? From all those college days, overview, content, conclusion, overview, content, conclusion. We're not creative writers. Nobody's ever going to read from beginning to end. But these three building blocks ensure that you always have the best content laid out, every information available, you haven't skipped anything. If you know you have your overview, your content, your conclusion, then you're in good shape for meeting the needs of your end users. Let's dive into those a little bit. So the overview, well, let's face it. How many of your users actually sat through the purchase of your software? Were they involved in the decision? Even here at the conference, so many times I've heard people say, my company chose to purchase this. That means they weren't involved. They didn't have any input in that decision. Had the same thing happen to me. My manager purchased a new software, decided, oh, Robin's the most organized person on my team. She can be in charge of it. Sat in on a meeting. No clue what the software was supposed to do. First meeting was with an implementation team, and they're asking me for this information and that information and the other information. You guys remember I came from a security software company, right? I don't give out information freely. So I'm going to hand over this sensitive information to people I don't know for a software I don't know what it does? Uh-uh. I stopped them right up front and said, you need to tell me what this stuff does before I tell you anything about my company. I know we purchased it, but pretend I'm clueless because I am. A lot of times that's the case, especially with truly complex software, where the person who's actually using it wasn't the one involved in all those pre-sales demonstrations. So the overview tends to become your mapping exercise. It takes how the marketing team and the sales team pitch that software and brings it back to how it actually gets used. They love their lingos. They love their own jargon. They don't use what I consider to be the correct terms, but the end user needs to have that tie-in between the two. So your overview at the beginning of a user guide really is designed to map between the two. Assume your end user has no clue what they're supposed to be doing with the software. Give them just that little layout. It makes all the difference. While it's usually the first section in the document, it's always the last one I actually write. I don't even try to tackle this until I finished my content and my conclusion. Because can you really tell someone what they're about to do when you haven't figured that out for yourself? Now, the content we've actually spent a lot of time in already. You find those individual components, you write on that topic. So I've heard a lot with the Flare team, their focus is on content, content, content. Write your content, that's where your focus is, and then your projects can build it out. Well, it's the same basic idea. You write the content in small components. Component-based authoring really makes a big difference, because then you can tie it into the bigger picture through the output. Never leave them hanging. Always give them some kind of guidance. No dead ends, no cliffs. Give them some type of wrap-up or summary. Hey, you just did this. Hey, this is what's supposed to be happening now. How do they know they completed the task successfully if they don't know what the expectation was? Remind them, even if you put it in the overview, remind them of the expectation. This is what just finished. What you just finished doing. Have you ever gotten a set of assembly instructions? I was assembling a cabinet for my bathroom. You know, one of those insert bolt A into part C and connect it with part F. Got to the end of a page and about half complete, you know. One leg, couple of shelves, trying to figure out how to attach the second leg. Turn the page and it's telling me all about balancing and putting it over the toilet so that it sits correctly. And I'm like, how is it going to do that when it's missing a leg? Flipped around a couple of pages, sure enough, misprint in the manual. My next step was 2 pages down for finishing that assembly. Always assume your readers need a conclusion. Tie it off. Don't leave off with the last step as being the last word on the phrase. Tell them what they just did. Maybe your next step or conclusion, or maybe your conclusion is the next step. What should they be doing next? You just completed this task. Now your next logical thing is to go do this task. My favorite part of this process is it's repeatable. So while I look at this as a whole document perspective, overview, content, conclusion, if I apply those same 3 principles to every key component content that I write, an overview, content, conclusion, that repetition always provides standalone sections. They should be able to stand on their own 2 feet or they don't belong in their own section. So you really want to make sure that your key components follow the same fashion. When you're writing those, you're presenting your overview, your content, and your conclusion. And again, the overview is the last thing I write. I don't even try to start there. It's like a writer's block, staring at a white screen in front of you or a blank piece of paper. Don't try. That's the worst place to start. Jump right into the middle. You guys have ever learned to swim? Someone toss you into the middle of the pool, or did you start on the edge and hold on to the edge? My dad, he threw me right into the middle. So, you know, jump in. It's not that scary. There's always someone around. But take advantage of that knowledge. Apply that to this perspective. Bring that overview, content, and conclusion for each of the individual components. Then when you bring them together, they have a nice flow. And you remind yourself, oh, that's right. I just explained how to do task A, and I'm telling myself here that I need to do task B, so that needs to come next. It leads you through the organization. And sometimes the documents just fall right into place. So I do use DocTeHelp, and I know not everyone in here does. How many of you guys have ever seen DocTeHelp? One? How many of you guys work in Word? Oh, wow. But you've used Word, right? Okay. So DocTeHelp made an impact on my writing. To give you just a little bit of background, my company shifted to DocTeHelp because they wanted me to produce all these different kinds of outputs. Well, remember, I'm not technical. I came from an educational world where Word is commonly used in the classroom. I knew it very efficiently. I even taught students how to use it. So I looked for a tool that allowed me to create all the outputs I needed from that, and I used DocTeHelp. I will say that the principles that I use within DocTeHelp, I think, are universally applicable across any type of content management system. So think about appeal. It's not just about what's on the page. You really need to not, once you got your content in and you're ready to move on to the publishing and presentation of your various outputs, no matter how well organized you are, it's going to go unread if you don't put in some kind of appeal. I mean, let's face it, in this high-tech age, how many people actually read? You've all heard it. Oh, nobody reads your documents anyways. I hate that. Let's take a lesson from the entertainment industry. You could just think of a movie that you really liked that just didn't get the acclaim that you thought it deserved. It was missing some type of bells or whistles that would have taken it to the box office and made it soar. So it didn't get the recognition. But it was really well written and you enjoyed it. It's the same with our documents. Your end users are going to want to find the information as quickly as possible with as little effort as possible. So once you've got your content written, take it to the next level by thinking about how it's being presented. How are they consuming it? Provide those visual aids. I know I work with one company, one of our partner companies, they don't do any pictures in their documentation. Honestly, I think that's a mistake. I think when you're working with complex software, you need those visual aids. If they don't want to do screenshots because of how fast the user interfaces change, well, add some diagrams. Provide information in a visual context that will really enhance what you're talking about. Consider the format they're consuming it in. Are they looking at this on a phone? Are they looking at this on tablets? Are they interacting with a website? Or do most of your readers go straight to the PDFs? My salespeople say my readers go straight to the PDFs. I don't think that's true. My readers are IT admins. They don't like PDFs. Sales guys forget that. So always think about your user, you know, how they're consuming this information. I offer my content both as in-product help files, so if they click a help link inside of any of our products, my user's guide is going to pop up in a various form, depending on if it's desktop-based or browser-based. We also offer it on a website. We have the PDF download options available as well. So think about the various outputs. What I learned when I started using Doc2Help was that I could make a Word file, you know, remember all those years of teaching how to use Word? I can make a Word file look really fantastic, generate on a beautiful PDF, great job, no problem. But when I turned that into an HTML file or a CHM file for the in-product help, it looked awful. Some of the documents I inherited don't really follow my process of, you know, standalone idea of overview, content, conclusion. If you ended up with two sections, headings side by side, they just disappeared. Because if there's no content, it wouldn't even show up in the CHM file. If there was no just a heading and a bunch of extra headings underneath to be used for a table of contents purpose, they just weren't showing up in the various outputs. And I'd end up with these missing pieces, or you'd have one sentence on a page. I actually skipped one of my slides. I'll come back to this one in just a moment. The idea behind that organization really developed out of using this Doc2Help tool. I had to fix all those errors of the past, bring them into a format that would really display accurately. As I mentioned before, my company did acquire or become Doc2Help users because it allowed me to work in Word. It provided me with the three major outputs that my company was asking for. But there are a lot of other options available, ebooks. I honestly don't remember all of them. Honestly, I love the capabilities that this allows me to put into these Word docs to really enhance the overall feeling and flow. A lot of cool search features, indexing features, things that you wouldn't normally think about when working in Word come right up to my fingertips using Doc2Help. So a couple things to know about Doc2Help. It uses Word styles for our page breaks. So as long as you understand how headings and the heading style work with Doc2Help, you can build out your content in a Word file very easily. So our headings are going to follow these page breaks. You've got the table of contents is going to be built off of that, or your navigation pane for the web browser versions. And the one thing to remember, though, is that you're limited to five headings. When you get to that sixth heading, Doc2Help kind of hits its limitation. But if you really think about it, when you're organizing content, especially for complex, if you've hit that sixth heading level, maybe you're going a little bit too far down the rabbit hole. Maybe it's time to reorganize your content. Remember, bringing everything up to the highest level, making it quick and easy, fewest clicks possible to get to the content thereafter. and definitely avoid that no text under a heading. That will get you every time. One of my favorite features is the collapsible sections. So the level 6 headings, okay? Don't want to go that far down the rabbit hole. But I see a need to go ahead and separate out some of this content. But it's not enough to stand on its own. It's extra information needs to be set apart, but it's not the standalone content. I want to keep it all grouped together. Here in my example, my user interface is filtering out threats. Remember IT security. So I had all these different explanations for threats, and some of them are very detailed. Some of them are one sentence, and some of them are like this one that I have expanded where it's just a couple of bullets explaining the threat option. Do I really want my end user to click through all of those various pages and then go back to where they need and remember, oh yeah, that's right, I am actually reading all these threat options, how to filter them out? Or can I bring them all together into a collapsible area where they can choose which ones to expand and collapse based on what threats they care about, and with a little bit of high-level explanation right at the top so that they know what they're looking at, they can find their content very easily, and it keeps it all grouped together. And if I'm generating a PDF off of the same project, no problem. My fake headers that I use when I implement a collapsible section makes it look and feel like it's a real header. I just can't hyperlink to it. Yes, sir. So the pane on the left will navigate to other sections or other pages. The collapsible sections are only visible on this particular page because they were specific to filtered threads. Mm-hmm. DocToHelp also allows for great interlinking capabilities. So I mentioned this morning when I presented what I was talking on that I have one project that has 7 different documents, 8 different outputs, all from a single project. Well, some of those outputs are just one document into one output. Other outputs are 2 or 3 documents combined together for an output. I have one output that actually is for all 7 of those documents. That's the one I post on my website. So with this linking between the documents, we have the capability of saying, okay, I need to go from my user guide to my install guide. Well, if I'm generating that CHM file, which just has the one user guide in it, I can't link directly to my install doc, so I give them a PDF download feature. With conditional statements, I can make sure that that output always has that link to it. I add another conditional statement with a different hyperlink, only this time it's going to be on my website where all the documents are in the same output. So I'm going to link directly to that section. This little interface here, it's bit blurry, sorry about that. Basically, I have my entire table of contents easily just find the section I want to link to in the document that it's from, and when your end user clicks on that, it redirects them directly to that section. They don't have to go searching for it. So it provides a really nice connection between your users' guides and your installation guides. Remember those welcome wizards? Well, they tend to be in the install guides, right? But the configuration information after you've done the welcome wizard, well, that's going to be in your main user guide because that's one of your user interfaces, right? So if I configured to connect to this Active Directory domain, but my company just acquired a new company and I've got to bring in their domain, well, now I need to add that over there. How do I go back in and do that without going through a welcome wizard? But I want to link between them so that they remember, oh, that's right, I needed this information when I set it up originally. I need this information, and this is how I go about modifying it. Another really cool tool is the ability to combine the audio and the video with the written word. If you've done any training videos, if you've got any information that allows you to bring that idea of let me listen instead of read, your users are going to love it. Videos, training videos, they never cover everything. They never will. They should be short, simple, straightforward. Once you've created them, whether you embed them directly into the project or link to, say, YouTube or Wistia or something like that, you can show it right in the middle of your outputs. And again, this would show up in every output except for my PDF. So even my CHM files in the end product help are going to pull up that video, giving them that high-level overview, and then all the explanations for the fine details are right there below it. Adds for a really nice user experience. And it is one of those ways that you can incorporate in more imagery and visual effects into your documentation, enhancing your overall experience for your users. So I'll dive in just a little bit into a DocToHelp project now. That means I have to sit down. All right, so let me introduce you to my V1.0 Stealth Recover tool. Yes, you're staring at a Word doc. I'm afraid I couldn't bring it onto the laptop. It has to be connected to a domain to work. So you are stuck with some screenshots here. But as you can see, this is a browser-based interface. And, oops, there we go. Basically, there are four interfaces to Stealth Recover. You have this home interface that you're currently staring at. It provides a summary of all the capabilities, all the environments within your domain. Then you have a rollback interface. So Stealth Recover's main job is to help Active Directory domain administrators undo accidental changes. You know, the last thing you want to do ever in a domain management is to accidentally deactivate the CEO's account. Stealth Recover would allow an IT admin to undo that in a matter of seconds instead of minutes, which could mean the difference between keeping his job or losing his job. So it's a pretty cool software. Right at the top level, they have this nice interface that gives them a high-level perspective of their domain. The ability to roll back or undo those changes is on another interface. The configuration interface has its own set of sections, and then there's a search feature allowing them to quickly find any object. So they know their CEO's account. They can quickly find that and undo that damage through a quick search. Now, when I first was handed this software, it was totally beta form, so I had very little guidance. They were still trying to figure out exactly what they wanted to do, but I knew the basic components that were going to be involved. So I took a look. I said, okay, home interface, well, mine was blank. I didn't have a domain to target right away, so that's not a great place for me to start. Rollback, well, again, if my home summary page is blank, I don't have any information to work with there, so I went straight to the configuration area because you have to configure it to interact with your domain in order to use it. So I started there. That's where my end user is going to start. I went to that section. So if I jump down to my configuration interface, you'll see there are lots of options. We've got a general tab where login credentials are put in. We've got domains where you can add your domains that are going to be monitored by Stealth Recover. Console access. Remember, it's IT security, so we don't want just anybody having access to this. We want to make sure that only the proper people have access to it, so we've got the security section. And a whole bunch of other options are required for properly configuring this tool. Just tackled it one at a time. Started with the general tab, explained each feature, jumped to the domains tab. This is where it started getting a little complicated. Not just one set of steps, but you can configure, you can modify, you can add, you can delete, and you have to explain what all the different pieces of information are. I tackled it one component at a time. But if you look at my navigation pane, am I at the beginning of my document? No, I'm actually towards the end. When I originally comprised this user guide, my configuration stuff was right there at the beginning. It was chapter one. When they handed me the installer, I learned that they pre-configured a welcome wizard that walks the end user through all of these features before they ever see the console. Well, not a problem. Do a little bit of tweaking of my content, drop it down to a little less important spot, and decided, okay, where should I really be focusing? Well, my end user's most important screen, once he's connected to his domain, is that home interface. So you'll see that right up there at the beginning, that's where I started. So I chose the organization based on the fact that my end user would spend most of their time here on this home interface, and if they needed to tweak that configuration, they could get to that in a later spot. Once I organized and decided the layout for my user guide, now it's time to take that look at how can I make it more user-friendly. So as I scroll down here, you can see most of these have 1 to 2 subsections, not too much further, until we get down here to domains. Remember all those various options? Well, how do you add a domain? How do you modify it? How do you delete it? All of those options got explained, step-by-step instructions on using the tool and the option. But I'm starting to go down a rabbit hole here. How can I bring this information up front? Is my end user going to immediately go to add and then modify and then delete, or are they going to just do one of those at a time? Well, it doesn't make sense to add and delete right on top of each other, so this is something they're going to do one piece at a time. They're not likely to just run right through all three of these. So, all right, let's apply those collapsible sections. Not very difficult to do. I already have a heading here, but if I expand it out, remember I mentioned my fake header? Looks just like a header, but it's not using a word heading style, so it doesn't get interpreted into those page breaks. I can quickly apply that, and you'll notice that those sections are disappearing from my table of contents. That means they're no longer going to generate their own pages. I can go through and do all of that right down the line. And since we are running out of time, I'm going to jump ahead. When I generated out my Doc to Help project, you'll see there's a lot of scrolling going on here. Well, on a PDF, that's fine, but on a web browser or on a CHM file, that's a problem. Okay, so if I jump into my project, Doc to Help, by the way, is completely embedded in Word. So I have all my work is done here, and I just jump from one ribbon to another with regard to the Doc to Help software. Makes it pretty nice. So if I jump to my Doc to Help ribbon, I select that Add Domain section, scroll down. That's what I don't want my readers to do. One click, whatever the first line is becomes the heading for my collapsible section. Done. So that when I generate it out again, now I have these nice collapsible sections. You're on this interface. You've got a good explanation, summary of what this interface allows you to configure. And expand the section you want. You need to add a domain. Jump in there. You're required to change your password every 60 days. Well, time to modify some information. Jump in here. That allows you to very easily navigate your users to the information they need with as few clicks as possible. So when you're thinking about that organizational structure, think about it from that perspective of how is your user consuming this information. So some basic finishing touches. Remember that never leave them hanging. Nice feature in Doc to Help allows you to put in more links. So maybe the next section isn't what they'll want to go to next. Remember, if you just added a domain, maybe you don't need to modify it right away. maybe it's time to jump back to the run a backup now section. Even if it's not the next section in the Word document, you can throw in that more link at the bottom to allow your end user to quickly go to the next logical step. Gives a lot more freedom than the straight through Word order. You can put any section you want through these related links. When you add in the install guide, maybe a landing page of some kind for the website, you can customize the table of contents. You can remove sections. So my Word file, when it's generated as a PDF, it has a more information section, which is the general, you know, company information. If you want to talk to sales, go here. If you want more information on technical products, go to our website. I don't want that on our website because they're already on our website if they're using our doc portal. So you can easily remove that section. It never shows up in the output for that website output because I have full control over my table of contents. I can generate any output with just a few moments switching out, making sure that I've got exactly what I need on demand. Are there any other questions? I know we've had one already. Quiet group. Well, I hope I provided you with some really good information and some tools to take back for tackling those more complex projects. Three words: overview, content, conclusion. Have a great day.